Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Yutet Amud Aleph, two lines down. Tanu Rabanan, Kli Shenitma Mi'erev Yom Tov, a utensil that became Tamei on Erev Yom Tov, Ein Matbilin Oto Ben Hashmashot. One cannot put it into the mikveh to be Metaheret Ben Hashmashot. Rashi claims over here the problem is, Mipnei Shu Safek Laila, it's a chance that that's already nighttime, Ben Hashmashot is a Safek Yom, Safek Laila, Benimsa Matbil B'Yom Tov, and if it really is nighttime, then he's putting in a Tvila on Yom Tov, which you already discussed previously is problematic. So you can't do it Ben Hashmashot because you have this Safek, you have this chance that it's Yom Tov, and because it's Yom Tov, then the restriction the Rabbona would kick in of Mitakin Kli, and then you wouldn't be able to Matbil the Kli Ben Hashmashot. Somewhat difficult, the explanation, because we have a generally have a principle, which is that a shvut, which is an isur d'rabanan, ben hashmashot, in that twilight zone, if it's b'makom mitzvah, if there's a mitzvah that's needed there, then we waive the din d'rabanan in general. So if it's a shvut, ben hashmashot, b'makom mitzvah, we generally waive it. And that would seem to be what this qualifies for, because you need it on Yom Tov. So it seems to be it's a makom mitzvah, it's ben hashmashot, and it's a shvut, it's only an isur d'rabanan. So we would assume that maybe that it should be mutar, yet Rashi's claiming over here that it's asur. Interestingly enough, the Rambam, in his codification, does not bring this down to halacha, and that might be because of exactly that point, which is that when you have a shvut, ben hashmashot, b'makom mitzvah, it's not a problem to do it. The offsetting possibility or mitigating possibility is that this isn't a makom mitzvah over here, because it's not necessarily a mitzvah to do the tevilah to make it tahor, maybe as other kelim. Or maybe it's not something that's going to be used in a mitzvah. So it's not necessarily a makom mitzvah. And if you define makom mitzvah much more narrowly, which is that the actual activity that you're engaging in is a mitzvah, then over here it may not be that way. It might be that you need it for a mitzvah, but what you're doing may not be a mitzvah unless you believe tefillah bizmano is a mitzvah. So maybe that's what's driving Rashi's side of the discussion over here and why the Tana Kama thinks it's problematic. And so, because there are opinions that believe that when there is a shvut, ben hashmashot, even shelo b'makom mitzvah, that you're allowed to violate that din d'rabbanan, and especially if it is a makom mitzvah, you're allowed to violate it, the Maharsha says that that can't be the explanation of what Rashi thinks is wrong with ben hashmashot, but rather the problem is indicated by Rashi later on, where he says that the problem is that it's einu l'tzorach yom tov, that it's not done for the purpose of yom tov, you're going to get no benefit on yom tov from this utensil. And that is because if you're doing the tefillah here at Ben Hashmashot, there's a possibility it's already Yom Tov. If it's already Yom Tov, then you're going to have to wait the Erev Shemesh, you're going to have to wait for the sunset on the tail end of Yom Tov before this Kli is going to be Tahor. So then what value do you have in putting in the mikveh Ben Hashmashot if you can't utilize it on the Yom Tov itself? Now, Maharsha himself raises the issue that Rashi, in yesterday's Zav, did away with one of the Girsaot because he said that there is a value to putting something in the mikvah on Yom Tov, even if there's not going to be Erev Shemesh, because you can use it for chulin and maser. So you make it into a tevul yom, which does allow you to utilize it with chulin. So why can't you say the same thing here? You're putting it to the mikvah here, at the beginning of Yom Tov, and therefore, it'll be allowed to be used for chulin and maser on Yom Tov, and there is a value on Yom Tov. So he says, it's tzarachiyun, he doesn't really understand what the issue is. He makes a suggestion, which he says is a dochak gadol, that this is a kohen doing it, and therefore, it's obvious that he wants to use it for truma. And since he wants to use it for truma, it won't be valuable. It won't be useful until after the Erev Shemesh. But as the Maharsha himself points out, who says that the Kohen doesn't have chulin as well? Why is he only eating truma? And as the Tzlach says in his conclusion of discussing this issue, he says, "V'amnam guf divei Rashi alo nechazim b'tzvach," that they are really caught up in a brush. It's very hard to understand it, but it's very hard to understand the Gemara. And so Rashi is doing the best to explain why it would be a problem, ben hashmashot. Then we have Shimon Sazuri Omer, Af Bechol in Bat Bilin Oto, even on a weekday, forget about Yom Tov, we wouldn't put it into the Mikna, B'nei Shetzarech Erev Shemesh, because you need the sun to set on it. That is because in the process of Tahara, first one goes to the Mikveh, that makes the person into a Tevul Yom. That Tevul Yom, once the sun sets, after they've gone to the Mikveh, they become what's called Erev Shemesh, that already makes them Tahor enough to eat and partake of Truma, and in many items also Kodashim. Something that also requires a korban to be tahor, then until the korban is brought, they're called mechusar kippurim, and then when they bring the korban, then they'll be mutar in kodoshim. Until that point, they'll only be mutar in truma. But in order for something to become tahor, or the mikveh to successfully make them tahor, then you need to have tvul yom, you need to have the actual mikveh, and then you need erev shemesh, you need the sun to set. If you do it ben hashmashot, then you're going to run into a problem, which is that the sun is quote-unquote already set. Ben hashmashot is in that twilight zone, and therefore you may not have a sunset that's afterwards, which would mean that you'd have to wait to the subsequent day until you get this sunset. And that's something that people could mistakenly assume is considered to be a good tevilah, because they did a benesh vashon and think they catch the sunset. And if that's the case, then they're going to mistakenly think that the item is tahor. So he says, I don't think you can even do this on a regular weekday. The Tana Kama, lo boi harav shemesh. Wait a minute. So why would the Tana Kama disagree with this? This is a pretty basic principle in Tarot that you need to have harav shemesh. So what Tana Kama doesn't hold of harav shemesh? Amarova ashkechindo the banan de bei rav. I found the Beit Midrash of Rav, the Yatve the Kamre. They were sitting, they were reviewing this halacha, and they explained it the following way. Be'machshato nikeret mitoch ma'asav. Kamiflagit, that the machloket here between the Tana Kama and Rav Shimon Shazuri is when his thought process is clear through his actions. It means that his actions tell us about what he's thinking. That's what they're arguing about. Hey Chidomi, what's the situation? Kagon, the Nokit Manabiyode, he's going with a kli in his hand. Virohit Va'azil Benashmashod, he's dashing. Benashmashod Latvule, in order to put it into the mikveh. Marsava Haidaka Rohit Va'azil, the fact that he's running and trying to make it there in time, Midoyode de Boy Harav Shemesh. He must know that you need Harav Shemesh, and he's running to make it there before sunset. Umar Savar Machmat Mlachtohu de Karohit. The reason that he's running is because he's out of time. He wants to get something done. And he's under pressure. And he's running not because he knows the halacha. And therefore, he's assuming that he needs to get there before the sunset. He's running because he has other pressures in his life. And therefore, the machloket is that the Tana Kama believes, since we could see that he's running to make the Harav Shemesh, if he realizes it's Ben HaShmashon, he misses the Harav Shemesh, he'll know that he has to wait until the subsequent day, and we're not worried about it. Rabbi Shimon Shazuri says, how do you know that? He could be running there for any number of reasons. One of those could be that you're right, he's running there because he knows that he needs Harav Shemesh. If he misses it, he'll lay it over till the next day. But that's not necessarily why he's running. He could be running because he has personal business, he's under pressure, he has a wedding to get to. Something else is pressuring him and he's running, and therefore he doesn't know the halacha, and he's going to assume that once he puts in the mikveh ben hashmashot, that the kli is tahor, and he won't wait for the subsequent day for the Harav Shemesh. V'aminu lehu, and Rava says to them, meaning that he disagrees with their explanation of the machloket, ana b'machshavato nikeret mitoch ma'asav d'kli yama lo plige. I think that when it comes to that matter, they're not arguing, and the way that the Rabbeinu Chananel explains it is, machshavato nikeret mitoch ma'asav divrei kol d'lav klumhu. Everybody agrees that it's meaningless, and that doesn't have any bearing here, and we don't use that as a factor in trying to determine whether we're going to be gozer here or we're going to allow this to go through. On the other hand, Rashi says that everybody agrees, we do subscribe to this principle of machshavato nikeret mitoch ma'asav, and therefore that's not the machloket. So what do I think the machloket is? Ki plige kagon ditmei b'pachot mikadasho. Another utensil became tamei with less than a kadasho. Va'at l'kamei d'rabonon l'sh'ulei. And he comes to ask the rabonon this question. B'pachot mikadasho itmei ilo. Does a kli that was touched with less than a kadasho, is it considered to be tamei? Adasho is a lentil. It is the smallest level of tumah that we have in Hilchot Tumah, and it's related to a tumat asheretz. There are 7 shretzim in the Torah that if they are found dead, they are mitamei. They are mitamei by the size of a kadasho. So here is an individual who is asking, there is tumah here, and he doesn't know this threshold of kadasho. Now this threshold of Kadasha is learnt out of the Psukim by the Chachamim, and it's a Misorah Lach Moshe Misinai. It's not something that's explicit in the Psukim. So the fact that he's coming to ask us about it, it's not unreasonable, but it means that he's not knowledgeable about the Hilchot of Tumah. So Mar Savar, Nidahalo Gamir, Harav Shemesh Namilo Gamir. Rabbi Shimon believes that since he doesn't know that basic halacha, that Asheretz is Mitamei B'Kadasha, he also doesn't know the halacha of Harav Shemesh. And therefore, we're not going to trust him, put it in the mikveh ben hashmashot, because he doesn't even know that he needs sunset, and he will think it's tahor right then. Umar Savar, hahu dulo gomir, he didn't know that, because that's something you need to learn. That's not something that's explicit in psukim. Harav Shemesh, which is something that's much more explicit in psukim, and can be deduced without having to know a halach lamoshe misinai, or know a mesorah, that gomir, that he does know about, and therefore we could trust him with regards to that. So that's what the Tana Kama says. The structure is somewhat strange because you have the individual captive right now. And if he's knowledgeable about Harav Shemesh, then what's the issue at all? If he's not knowledgeable about Harav Shemesh, why are we telling him not to take the kli to the mikveh for ben hashmashot? Just tell him that you need Harav Shemesh. Why don't you give him the information that he needs rather than restricting him from putting it into the mikveh. So then you have to build on this, that there's other people seeing him do this. And then if other people are seeing him do this, they're going to get the mistaken impression that you can do a tefillah benesh mashot. So even if we instruct him to do the right thing, he's not knowledgeable about it, but now we make him knowledgeable. That doesn't mean the people that are watching him or seeing him are going to be knowledgeable about it. The other possible way to explain it is that you have to assume here that the Chachamim were just worried about this period of time, that even somebody who was knowledgeable may not realize that you need the Hair of Shemesh, or that he missed the Hair of Shemesh, because you're dealing with the Twilight Zone, you're dealing with the Benesh Mashot. The Chachamim didn't want people to play around with that period of time, that gray area, because they could make judgment mistakes, and then you'd have a problem if it doesn't have Hair of Shemesh, and it would have Tumah that wasn't removed from it, even though the person thinks it was removed from it. So the Chachamim didn't want to make it into a subjective decision process or a teaching lesson. They just made it that across the board, we don't want people doing this benesh mashot, so that we don't run into this problem of people mistakenly thinking that this kli is tahor. But both of those answers aren't as good as the question, but at least try to address what's happening here as to what the machloket is according to Rava. Alright, so now the Gemara continues to explain the last lines in the Mishnah. It says there, matmilim migav legav. You can do from one to the other. Now, the word here can either be migav legav, which means from back to back, but gav legav means like one on top of the other, or the way that the Tosfot Yom Tov explains it is that it should be read migev legev, and a gev is a pit or a cistern. It's a water pool. And so then it would mean gev legev is you can go from water pool to water pool, and we'll see how either one of those explanations, it's the same thing, but it's just using a different word to explain it, which is Tanrabanan. Ketzad migav legav, rotzela sot gito, Al-Gav Kado. Person wants to be mitaher something for his wine press. Al-Gav Kado, that he already was mitaher for his olive press. So the gat represents the wine press, and the kad represents the olive press. Or it could be bado, which would then be olive press. That's another way to read it, because the bad is the olive press, and the gat is the wine press. So if he already was mitaher it for the oil, and now he wants to mitaher it for the wine, that's not a problem. Bekado agav gito, and vice versa, it's true too. Or bado agav gito, if he already was mitayer it for his wine press, and now he wants to use it for his olive press, oseh, we allow him to do it. The way that Rashi explains it over here is that the person was already taking these items to the mikveh, made them tahor, and so they are tahor. But he had a specific intent in mind, and that was that he wanted to use them for the wine press, or he wanted to use them for an olive press. Whatever his intent was, that's what he took them to the mikveh for. Now comes back and he changed his mind about utility he wants from them, and now he wants to take them to the mikveh again. The halacha in this case is that he doesn't have to take them back to the mikveh because he already was mitayer them. And therefore the action that he's taking is an action that is extra halachic, meaning that he's outside the realm of halacha. He's doing it as a chumrah, or he's doing it because he feels better that if he's mitayer for a particular purpose, then it's dedicated for that purpose. And so he wants to, out of a chumrah or a maila in the Torah, wants to take it back to the mikveh for this dedicated purpose to be changed to another dedicated purpose. That tevilah has no meaning in the halacha. And since it has no meaning in the halacha, it's not a tikkun, or it's not a problem on Shabbat and Yom Tov, because you're not doing anything. You're not taking an action that has halachic ramifications. When do we say there's a problem of tikkun kli? When do we say there's an issue? Is when you have something that changes its status halakhically. That looks like tikkun kli. That looks like you're actually rectifying or changing something. But if you do something that has no halakhic ramification, then it doesn't have that semblance of tikkun kli, and therefore would not be restricted on Yom Tov. And that's what it means, that it matbilimi gav de gav. If you want to do this extra chumrah or maila because you think that it'd be nice to take it to the mikveh, that's not impactful halakhically, and therefore it's permitted on Yom Tov. Ketzai me chabura de chabura. So what's the situation of chabura la chabura? Hayo ochel bechabura zo, v'rotzeh le'echol bechabura acheret harashut biyado. If he's eating with this chabura, and he changes his mind, and he wants to eat in another chabura, then that's fine. Now chabura is a terminology that's usually used by Korban HaPesach, which is that you have a group of people that join together to bring the Korban HaPesach. So he was tamei, or his kelim were tamei, and he took them to the mikvah in order to join a particular chabura. And then he changes his mind and joins another group of individuals, or he removes himself from this group and puts himself together with other individuals. Now he wants to go back to the mikveh, either for himself or for his kelim, in order to participate with the new chabura. So now when he changes chaburot again, there's no necessity, min halacha, to go back to the mikveh. He's tahor already, and his kelim are tahorim. If he wants to, mitzad chumrah, go back to the mikveh, or put his kelim in the mikveh, Again, that's outside the halachic realm. It's extra halachic, and therefore it has no ramifications halachically. Since it has no ramifications, it's not tikkun. It's not a tikkun, and it's not a problem on Yom Tov, and therefore he's permitted. He's allowed to, or reshut biyadol, he has permission to do that. So in these latter two cases of the Mishnah, the reason why you can do it or take it to the mikveh, according to Rashi, is because you've done nothing halachically. And since you've done nothing halachically, you don't have any tikkun here, and there's no reason for the chachamim to be gozer. And as the Shita Mikubetzit points out, the chiddush is that we permit it despite the fact that this individual thinks he's doing something. In his own eyes, or this individual's eyes, he thinks he's doing something that's halachic. So despite the fact that he thinks he's doing something halachic, we permit it because we know he's not doing anything halachic. Interesting, because that person could get a mistaken impression that it is permitted to go to the mikveh on Yom Tov, because he's allowed to do it in this situation. It may extrapolate it to other situations where there is real halachic impact. But that's where the Chachamim said, we do not go there. We don't worry about these situations. If people want to do these chumrot, let them do these chumrot, because they have no halachic ramification. Therefore, it's permissible, even though this person thinks they're doing some sort of tikkun. The other possible way to explain this is that in the Mishnayot and Taharot, and in the Gemara and other places, the Gemara speaks about the fact that when somebody goes to the mikveh and does a tevilah, whether for himself or for his kelim, he has to do that for in mind the specific dargat ha-tahara. He has to do it for the particular level of tahara that he's going to be engaged with. There are different levels of tahara. There's tahara for chulin, there's tahara for truma, there's tahara for kodashim, and there's tahara for paraduma. All those are different levels of tahara. And the Chachamim instituted that if you want to work with any one of those levels of tahara, that you have to go to the mikveh with that particularly in mind. You need to have that tahara or level of tahara in mind when you go to the mikveh. And if you want to then change that level, you started out, you went to the mikveh for chulin. Now you want to have it for truma. The way the Mishnah says is that the tarata chulin is midras for the tarata truma. And then subsequently, if you did a tahara for truma, that's midras for kodashim. I mean that you're viewed as being tamei. That's a maila in tumah, that you're viewed as being tamei for the next level of tahara. Now, if you had in mind that level of tahara from the outset, it wouldn't matter. So if you go for truma, it would cover truma and chulin. If you went for kodashim, it would cover all of kodashim, truma, and chulin. But you have to have that in mind. So what the possible explanation here is, well, is the possibility that this person went for a certain level of tahara to the mikveh, or took his kelim to the mikveh. Now he wants to upgrade that level of tahara. So again, here, that's all a maila derabonon. It has no real halachic impact. It's all a maila derabonon. And even though there's really an institution, the chachamim, there, their maila is already codified in a sense in the halacha. Nevertheless, since it's only a maila in tahara, we don't classify that as being a tikkun on Yom Tov, and therefore we permit you to do that. So that's the way that the Rambam explains this part of the Mishnah, that it's about upgrading the level of tahara, which are all of Mailot de Rabbanan that are not real halachic tikkunim in the Tahara, and that's why it's permissible on Yom Tov. And now we move on to the next Mishnah, which is Beit Shammai Omrim, Mevi'in Shlamim Ve'in Sumchim Aleihem. You can bring Shlamim on Yom Tov, it seems, Ve'in Sumchim Aleihem, but you can't do Smicha. Smicha is required by certain Korbanot. That is that most Korbanot Yachid require Smicha, with the exception of Bechor, Maaser, and Pesach. Most of the Korbanot HaTzibur do not require smicha. There are exceptions to that, including certain chataot that are brought for the Tzibur, like the Seir HaMishtaleach, the Paralam Dover Shel Tzibur. Certain Korbanot HaTzibur do require smicha. So that smicha over here, according to Beit Shammai, cannot be done on Yom Tov. It seems that it's in the context of the Mishnah. And the reason it can't be done on Yom Tov is because when you do smicha, you have to do it b'chol kocho. The Gemara says you have to put all your strength into it. That means you have to lean heavily onto the animal. That's called tashmish b'bal chai. That's utilizing an animal on Shabbat, which is restricted midrabanan. Rabbanan said you can't do that. You can't utilize an animal on Shabbat. And therefore you can't lean on the animal. So Beit Shammai says that you can bring the shlamim, but you can't do smicha aleihem. The implications would be that either you don't do smicha at all, possibly that you do smicha on Erev Yom Tov, or the third possibility is that Beit Shammai is making a separate statement that's not connected to the statement before, which is that the first statement is about Yom Tov, mevi'in shlamim on Yom Tov. The second statement is a generic statement, which is ein somchim aleihem. Shlamim in general don't require smicha, nothing to do with Yom Tov. So those are all different possible ways to understand this part of the Mishnah. Aval lo olot. What you can't bring on Yom Tov is an olah. Now, obviously, it's not a reference to the Olot HaTzibur, which overrides Shabbat and Yom Tov in general, because there's Manam Kavua, they have a fixed time, and anything that has a Korban with a fixed time is Doche Shabbat and Doche Yom Tov. Rather, here, we're talking about the Olot of the Yachid. When it comes to Olat HaYachid, the Olat HaYachid does not override Yom Tov, because you have a requirement of Ochel Nefesh. I mean, Ochel Nefesh is a permission to do Malacha on Yom Tov, but it has to be something where you get a benefit from it, where you're going to consume some of it. And Olah, which goes entirely on the Mizbeach, has no benefit to the individual that's doing it, and therefore it's restricted based on the limud of Lachem, which is part of the Pasuk of Kihu Levado Yaseh Lachem, that that's what you're allowed to do on Yom Tov for Ochel Nefesh, Lachem Lo Lugvoa. It's for you and not for a Kodesh Baruch Hu, meaning that if it's totally dedicated to Hashem, then you can't bring it on Yom Tov, and that's the limud that Beit Shammai is leaning on in terms of not bringing olot on Yom Tov. Beit Hillel omrim, mevin shlamim veolot. You can bring a shlamim, you can bring an olah on Yom Tov, v'somchim alehem, and you can do smicha. So again, with regards to the smicha, either they say that the din derabbanan is waived on Yom Tov, because it's b'makom mitzvah, the chachamim waived the restriction of tamish b'bal chai, leaning on the animal, and they permitted it on Yom Tov. Or if you think that this is a generic statement, they're just saying that shlamim in general require smicha. In addition, bringing a shlamim is similar to Beit Shammai, because that's something that you eat on Yom Tov itself, so it makes sense that you can bring it on Yom Tov. Olot, they don't darshan the pasuk the way that Beit Shammai does. Rather, Beit Hillel believes that lachem comes to exclude a goy and not gavoa, and therefore even things that are dedicated to a Kodesh Baruch Hu can be brought on Yom Tov. So now, Amar Ula. Ula tries to explain to us this machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Machloket b'shamei chagiga lismoch v'lo'atriya likarev. The question at hand over here is with regards to shlamim that are brought for the chagiga. Those are obligatory korbanot that one brings on Yom Tov. Shamei chagiga, which when you come up to the Beit HaMikdash for the regel, you have to bring a chagiga. And we'll learn that when we get to Masechet Chagiga, that there is v'chagotei moto chag l'Hashem, that you have to celebrate with Hashem, and that celebration, that chagiga, includes bringing a shlamim. So, according to Ula, that machlok between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel is whether you can do smicha on a shlamei chagiga, or you cannot do smicha on a shlamei chagiga. They both agree, as the Mishnah says, that you can bring that shlamim. Question is, can you do smicha on it? So that's the first statement he makes. The second statement says, ve'olatriya, another obligation when someone comes up to the regel, is lo yira'u panai reikam. When you come to visit Hashem on the regel, you're not allowed to come empty-headed. And that requires, or the requirement then, is to bring an olah as part of your appearing before Hashem. And so that's called olat ri'iyah. So he says that that's the other machlok between them as to whether you can bring an olah on Yom Tov. Can you bring that obligatory olah that comes with Aliyah on the regel? Can you bring it on Yom Tov? The Beit Shammai Sabre, Beit Shammai believes, v'chagotem oto chag l'Hashem, which is a source for the fact that you have to bring Shami Chagiga. Chagiga in, olat ri'iyah lo. The heter is chag, that you can bring a chagiga. You can bring a shamei chagiga. That is permissible, but you may not bring an olat ri'iyah. That's the diuk out of the pasuk. Ubeit Hillel savrei l'Hashem. Anything that's brought l'Hashem, which is an obligation that you have to bring to l'Hashem, then kol de l'Hashem, you can bring on Yom Tov. That includes both shamei chagiga and olot ri'iyah. Aval, what they agree about that you cannot bring on Yom Tov is nedarim v'nedavarot divyako en krivim b'yom tov. Voluntary korbanot. Korbanot that you're not obligated to bring because of the Yom Tov, those cannot be brought on Yom Tov. So if you have Nidarim, Nidavot, you have Todah, Shlamim, any type of Korban that you're bringing up to the Mikdash that you would like to bring on Yom Tov, that cannot be brought on Yom Tov. It must be brought on Chol HaMoed and not on Yom Tov. So the Machloket is very particular to the Korbanot that are associated with the Regel. Those are the Shamei Chagiga, the Olot Ri'iyah. Shamei Chagiga, everybody agrees, can be brought. Question about the Smicha, which we'll have to deal with later on. And then the Olat Ri'iyah is a question as whether it's only Shami Chagiga, like Beit Shammai says, because it says, V'chagotem oto chag v'Hashem. For Chagiga, yes. Olat Ri'iyah, no. And Beit Hillel, who says that there's a ribuy in the Pasuk of Hashem, that even things that are going dedicated to Hashem can be brought on Yom Tov, and therefore not only can a Shami Chagiga be brought, but even an Olat Ri'iyah can be brought. Tosafot over here says, I don't understand why this is the explanation for Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel's positions. We already explained in the Mishnah that their positions come from a different limud, and why don't they just bring that over here? He says, for Beit Shammai, why don't we say, lachem v'lo lagvoa? They're going to darshan that later on, that the pasuk of Ochel Nefesh says for you and not for a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's what excludes it. Why are they bringing the Chag Lotem Ocholoto, Chag Lashem over here? And same question can be asked to Beit Hillel. Beit Hillel says mitoch. Since something is mutar for a Melecha Tochel Nefesh, we saw earlier in the Gemara, mitoch shehutra lochel nefesh, it's hutra shelo lochel nefesh. That once a melacha is mutar because of ochel nefesh, it can also be mutar for things that are not ochel nefesh. Tosafot qualified that back then, that it has to at least be tzorech tzat yom tov. And Tosafot repeats over here what he said back on Daf Yud Bet, which is that there is a tzorech tzat over here, which is the fact that your table should not be full while a Kodesh Baruch Hu's Mizbeach is empty. It's inappropriate on Yom Tov that you should be having a big Sudan, a big feast, and God's Mizbeach, God's quote-unquote table, should be empty. And therefore, that's a tzorech Yom Tov. And if that's the case, that's the reasoning behind Beit Hillel's position. So if that's the case, why are we bringing this other pasuk over here? So what Tosafot in the end says is that they both bring the pasuk to say that don't darshan it like the other party. Beit Shammai says, Kol Godem Chag LaHashem is Chagigah and not Olat Riyah, so you don't think like Beit Hillel that LaHashem comes to include an Olat Riyah. And Beit Hillel says, don't learn like Beit Shammai, that's Chagigah and not Olat Riyah, because it says LaHashem. But in both those situations, that's not their core limud. Their core limud comes from other sources. They're just trying to negate the possibility of darshing the pasuk like the other party. And so that's Ula's explanation of their machloket. V'chein amar Ravada Ba'ava. Ravada Ba'ava corroborates this idea that when it comes to this argument between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, they're dealing with issues of korbanot that are particular obligations of the regio. But nidarim in devot, ein krevim b'yom tov. Voluntary offerings cannot be brought on Yom Tov. Meitevei, is Ula's statement makes sense? Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. So now we have a Tana in a Braita who's telling us, Lo nechlechu Beit Shammai Beit Hillel al Ola, she'ena shel Yom Tov, she'ena kreiva bi Yom Tov. Any Ola that does not belong to Yom Tov, meaning it's not particular to Yom Tov, that cannot be brought on Yom Tov. Va'shlamim she'en shel Yom Tov, she'krevim bi Yom Tov. And shlamim that are a part of Yom Tov, they can definitely be brought on Yom Tov. Ama nechleku. So what's the machlok between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel? Olola shehi shel Yom Tov, v'ashlamim she'enam shel Yom Tov. And an Ola of Yom Tov, which is the Olat Riyah, that's same as Ula, that the machlok between them is about an Olat Riyah, whether you can or cannot bring it on Yom Tov. But now he has an additional part of their machlok, which is ashlamim she'enam shel Yom Tov. Shlamim that are not Yom Tov shlamim. It's not Shalmei Chagigah. So they say it's Shalmei Simcha, or other shlamim that you're going to be bringing on Yom Tov. So then, can you bring those? Beit Shammai omrim lo yavi. Beit Shammai says you may not bring those extra shlamim on Yom Tov. Beit Hillel omrim yavi. And Beit Hillel says you can bring it on Yom Tov. So that would go against Ula's supposition about their machloket, because Ula said that when it came to nedarim and nedavot, voluntary offerings, everybody agreed you can't bring them on Yom Tov. According to this view in the Braita of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, they're arguing about shlamim that are not obligations of Yom Tov. That's a voluntary offering. That's a neder v'nidava that you're bringing on Yom Tov. And he's claiming that that's a machlok Beit Hillel Beit Shammai, when Ula made the claim that it was not subject to their machloket. Everybody agreed there that it was a problem. So you have a problem from a braita. Ula's an amora. And now we have a braita indicating that the machlok between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai covers areas that Ula says that they agree with. So that's a big problem for Ula. So when it says, Taritz ve'mahochi, let's reread the Braita. Let's amend the Braita to read slightly differently, which is Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Lo nechlegu Beit Shammai Beit Hillel al Ola vishlamim she'enan shel Yom Tov. They don't argue about an Ola or shlamim that don't belong to Yom Tov, meaning that they're nedarim and nedavot. She'en krevim b'Yom Tov. That would be similar to Ula's position that nedarim and nedavot cannot be brought on Yom Tov. Everybody agrees about that. Vashlamim she'en shel Yom Tov she'krevim b'Yom Tov. And they also agree that a Shalmei Chagiga can be brought on Yom Tov. And that Ula said as well. Aman Echlaku, so what's the Machloket? Now we narrow it down to one point, which is the similar thing to what Ula suggested, which is Alula Shisha Yom Tov and Ola Tri'iya, which is the Ola of Yom Tov. Shebeit Shammai Omrim Lo Yavi, Beit Hillel Omrim Yavi. That would be then similar to our Mishnah, or the way that Ula explained the Machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. What's interesting over here is that we're amending a Braita to fit Ula's position. Ula's an Amora. Why are we molding the Braita to fit Ula's position rather than just saying Ula's wrong and then we have to follow the Braita? So either you have to suggest over here that the Braita was not a Braita that was from the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Ushaya or Rabbi Chia, and therefore it doesn't carry as much weight in terms of its veracity, and therefore we're more likely to say there's a problem in the Braita, or we would be more willing to say that the Braita is problematic and therefore amend it, or you have to say that there's some sort of internal problem in the Braita that makes it already subject to have to be changed, and once you're going to change it already, you may as well change it to fit Ula's position as well. And that might be because once the Braita already says that there's a machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai with regards to Shlamim that are not relevant to Yom Tov, then it's already indicating that Korbanot HaYachid are Mutarim on Yom Tov. Once you've established that, why doesn't their machloket also extend to an Olah that is not Shayach to Yom Tov? Because we already know that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel argue about whether you can bring an Olah to Riyah. That same machloket should apply to an Olah that's not Olah to Riyah if you're going to permit a Korban HaYachid like a Shlamim on Yom Tov, a Korban Shlamim that's not relevant to the day on Yom Tov. So why should there be a difference between a Shlamim and an Olah? Because we know that Beit Hillel does not differentiate, and we know that Beit Shammai does differentiate. So their machloket should be extended. Why would you separate between Olah and Shlamim? And that creates a problem in the internal structure of the Braita. And because we have to solve that problem anyway, we may as well solve it in a way that aligns with the position of Ula and doesn't cause him a problem anymore. Rav Yosef Amar, Tanai Shakalt Mi'alma. You pulled a Braita out of thin air, and now you're saying it's a problem for Ula. And then you're trying to amend the Braita to make it fit with Ula. It says the question is improper. The question says, oh, we have a Tana that says this. Who says we don't have a Tana that disagrees with this Tana and agrees with Ula? Just because there's a Tana that has a Braita that doesn't agree with Ula doesn't mean Ula's wrong. Ula may just be following a different Tana. And that's what he says, that it is Tanai. It is a Machloket Tanaim. And so Ula doesn't subscribe to Rabbi Shimon Elazar's view of the Machloket between Beit Hillel and Shammai. He subscribes to a different Tana's view as to what the Machloket is. The Tanya, Shlamim Abayim Achmat Yom Tov, Bi Yom Tov. Shlamim that are coming because of the regal on Yom Tov, meaning Shlamei Chagiga. Beit Shammai Omrim Sumeich Aleihem, Me'erev Yom Tov. So here's one view in the Tanaim as to what the story is about Ein Somchim Aleihem. Here it's clear in this Braita that Ein Somchim Aleihem means you don't do it on Yom Tov, but you do it on Erev Yom Tov. So it's not about Shlamim in general. It's about this Shlamim on Yom Tov. Mishochatim b'Yom Tov. And then you can bring them on Yom Tov. Shlamei Chagiga is permitted on Yom Tov. Beit Hillel Omrim, Sumech Aleihem b'Yom Tov. You can even do the Smicha on Yom Tov. Again, because we waive it b'makom mitzvah, the problem of the Shvut d'Rabbonon of leaning on an animal or kind of quasi-riding on the animal that we waive. Mishochatim b'Yom Tov, and you can bring them on Yom Tov. Aval, when it comes to Nidarim v'Daverot, Tiri HaKol Ein Krivim b'Yom Tov. Comes to voluntary korbanot, everybody agrees that they're not brought on Yom Tov. So there is a braita that's explicitly like the view of Ula, which is that the machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel does not reach the nedarim and nedavot. Everybody agrees voluntary offerings of the yachid are not brought on Yom Tov. If that's the case, that aligns with Ula's position. And then that question from the other braita is not a question on Ula because he just follows a different tana. And we don't have to amend the Braita might disagree. And Ula disagrees with that Braita because he has a Tana that backs him up. And these Tanaim that have a Machloket here about Nedarim and Devot is similar to another Machloket Tanaim that we have, the Tanya. So we have a Braita here, which is somewhat unclear what the Braita means. Gemara has a Havamin about what the Braita means, then the Gemara amends the understanding of the Braita. And even in the amended version of what they think the Braita is, you'll still have this Machloket Tanaim here, as to whether Nidarim and Devot can be brought on Yom Tov. D'tanya, Ein Mevim Todah B'Chag HaMatzot B'Pnei Chametz Sheba. One may not bring a Korban Todah on Pesach. Pesach, there's an Isur Chametz. One of the only two Korbanot that are ever brought in the Mikdash that have Chametz is the Todah. The Todah comes with 40 Lechamim. 30 of those Lechems are Matzah, and they're not a problem. 10 of those are Chametz. And you can't bring them on Pesach in the Mikdash. So one is obligated to bring a Todah. They can't bring it on Pesach, not on Yom Tov, not on Chol HaMoed, not on last day of Yom Tov, because it's a problem of Chametz. V'lo be'atzeret b'nei shu Yom Tov. You can't bring it on Shavuot, because Shavuot has no Chol HaMoed. It only has Yom Tov. It's a one-day Yom Tov with no Chol HaMoed, so you can't bring it on Shavuot. It would seem to imply here, and the Todah is a neder or nidava, it's not an obligation of the holiday, and he's bringing it up as a voluntary offering of the Yachid. And we're saying here that it's precluded from being brought on Pesach because it has Chametz. So that's not relevant to our situation. But we also say it can't be brought on Shavuot, which is Yom Tov, which makes it sound like Nedarim and Nedavot cannot be brought on Yom Tov, similar to the Tana that we just brought and similar to Ula's view that we saw before. Aval, Edam Mevi Todato B'Chag HaSukkot. Person can bring his Todah on Sukkot. Now again, the assumption here would be that, well, if you can't bring it on Shavuot because it's Yom Tov, then on Sukkot also you can't bring it because it's Yom Tov. What does Sukkot have that Shavuot and Pesach don't have? Well, it has the fact that it has Chol HaMoed, unlike Shavuot. and has the fact that it has no restriction on chametz, unlike Pesach. So you can bring it on Chol HaMoed Sukkot. So what you see from here, it seems to be that the Tanna Kamma believes that Nedarim and Devot cannot be brought on Yom Tov. The only time they can be brought in the Shlosh Regalim is on Chol HaMoed Sukkot. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Arehu Omer. The Pasuk says, B'chag HaMatzot, U'b'chag HaShavuot, U'b'chag HaSukkot. The Pasuk connects all three of these Regalim together. And the truth is, as the Mefarshim point out over here, the Pasuk already says Shlosh Regalim. So it already told you about the Shlosh Regalim, and we know what the Shlosh Regalim are. So why does the Pasuk then go out of its way to say in Parshat Re, B'chag HaMatzot, V'chag HaShavuot, V'chag HaSukkot? And in particular, we're going to see later on, it's written in the context of Chag HaSukkot. So why are we mentioning all these Chagim when we know what they are? They were just mentioned previously in Parshat Re. And so we know that the Shlosh Regalim are Chag HaMatzot, Chag HaShavuot, V'chag HaSukkot. So Kol Sheba B'chag HaMatzot, Ba B'chag HaShavuot, U'B'chag HaSukkot. Anything that can be brought on Pesach can be brought on Shavuot or can be brought on Sukkot. Kol Shelo Ba B'chag HaMatzot, anything that can't be brought on Pesach, Enu Ba B'chag HaShavuot, V'chag HaSukkot, cannot be brought on Shavuot or Sukkot. So the Gemara will explain Rabbi Shimon's position in a second. Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shimon, his son, Omer, Mevi Adam Toda B'chag HaSukkot, V'yotze Ba Yidei Chovato Mishum Simcha, V'en Yotze Ba Mishum Chagiga. Person can bring a Toda on Sukkot. It would seem that he agrees with the Tanna Kamma that you can't bring it on Pesach and Shavuot, but you can bring it on Sukkot. And when you bring it on Sukkot, it discharges your obligation for Shamei Simcha, which is the obligation to bring korbanot to be sameach on your chag, but it does not fulfill your obligation to bring a chagigah, which is an obligatory offering for aliyah the rego. The reason being is because you're not allowed to bring a chovah, an obligatory korban, you cannot bring from something that you're already obligated to bring. And here, the todah you have to bring because you committed yourself to bringing the todah. You took a neder, a nedavah, you're committed to bring it for some other reason. So then you can't take that commitment and then use it to discharge an obligation that is an obligation on you to bring a separate korban. You can't kill two birds with one stone. You have to have one korban for each thing that you are obligated to do. One obligation is the chagigah. The other obligation is the todah. And they have to be separate. On top of that, there is a requirement of shamei simcha. Now, as Rashi notes over here, the obligation of shamei simcha is not the shlamim, but the simcha. Is that you have to be happy. In the time of the Beit HaMikdash, we know that the only way to have simcha is through shlamim or through korbanot. So it has to be through basar korbanot in order to have simcha. So the requirement is that it be a basar korban that creates the simcha. But there's no obligation about what particular korban it is. And there's no obligation to bring a korban of simcha. It's just that you have to have simcha. So how you do it is up to you, or how you create it is up to you. So if you bring a todah, that is then a korban that you can eat during the Sukkot, that will qualify as a shalmi simcha. You're eating meat from a korban that produces simcha, and then you qualify or you discharge the obligation of having simcha on the chag. So it's the difference between the chagigah, which is a particular obligation to bring a par korban or a particular korban, shlamim for the chagigah, and shamei simcha, which is not an obligation to bring a particular korban, but an obligation to have simcha through a korban. And so that's what Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon is saying, is that when you bring the todah on Chol HaMoed Sukkot, that you discharge your obligation for shamei simcha, but you do not discharge your obligation for Shamei Chagigah. So Amar Mar, so now the Gemara goes back to discuss the Braita. Emi vin todah b'chag HaMatzot b'nei Chametz Sheba, Pshita. Tanna Kamma says you can't bring it on Pesach because of Chametz. That's a straightforward thing. You don't need a Braita to tell you that halacha. So Amar Avada b'rei d'Rav Yitzchak v'amilah Rav Shmuel bar Abba, Hocha bar Basar iskinan. When you say can't bring it on Pesach, doesn't just mean on Yom Tov Pesach or Chol HaMoed Pesach. It means on Erev Pesach you can't bring it. The Kasavar, and the reason being, we don't shorten the time that you have to consume a korban. A regular korban is allowed to be eaten for one day and one night. Shlamim are allowed to be eaten for 2 days and the night in between. So a todah has one day, the day that you bring it, and the night afterwards. The problem is that on Erev Pesach, halfway through the day, you have an Isur Chametz that kicks in, and even earlier, Midrabanan. And then for sure at night, there's an Isur Chametz that is associated with the first day of Pesach. So if you bring a korban todah in the morning of Erev Pesach, you have a very short window to be able to eat the chametz there, and then it's going to get cut off because of the Yisr chametz. So then you're forcing a korban to go into a psul state earlier than it would have otherwise give if it was given its proper time. And that's problematic. It's machlok between the chachamim and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says it's not a problem. Mevim korban the day psul, at least b'makom atzorech. And the chachamim say you can't do that. So what the Braita is saying, it's like, this is like the chachamim. that you can't bring a korban todah on Erev Pesach because you're shortening the time that you could consume it, and therefore it's problematic. That's why we actually skip saying Mizmor L'todah on Erev Pesach, because you can't bring a korban todah on Erev Pesach. Why can't you bring it on Shavuot because it's Yom Tov? Kasavar, Nedarim Nedavot, Inkrivim B'Yom Tov. That's as we mentioned before in the Braita, it's because you can't bring a Neder and Nedava on Yom Tov, and that would align with the Braita we just brought, as well as with the position of Ula. Avol Mevi Adam Torato B'Chag HaSukkot. Eimat, when on Chag HaSukkot? Ilei would be Yom Tov Atzmo. If you can bring on Yom Tov itself, Amart, V'lo Batzeret, V'neshu Yom Tov. You already precluded that possibility when you said on Shavuot you can't bring it because it's Yom Tov. So why should Sukkot be any different? Ela b'cholo shel moed, you can bring it on cholo moed. So here you have that one position that aligns with the Braita we brought and with Ula's position. Now Rabbi Shimon Omer, Hare Omer, b'chag ha-matzot, b'chag ha-shavuot, b'chag ha-sukkot. Kol sheba b'chag ha-matzot, ba b'chag ha-shavuot, b'chag ha-sukkot. Kol shelo ba b'chag ha-matzot, eino ba b'chag ha-shavuot, b'chag ha-sukkot. So that's his position. Matki v'la Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera says, I don't understand Rabbi Shimon's position. Hashta salute misaltinan. Here he permits on Chol HaMoed for you, according to Rashi, to chop wood, meaning cut down trees for wood to use on Chol HaMoed. You can do more than you need for that particular day, but you're allowed to do a straight-out melacha on Chol HaMoed. So if you can do a straight-out melacha on Chol HaMoed, why can't you bring a korban todah on Chol HaMoed Sukkot? Doesn't make any sense. Others say salute misaltinan comes from the word solet, and that means that you can make fine flour or you can mill flour on Chol HaMoed, again, which is a melacha gemura. If you can do that on Chol HaMoed, why can't you bring a korban todah on Chol HaMoed? Others suggest salute misaltinan is splitting wood. I mean, it's not cutting, like Rashi says, wood from something that's mechubar, but rather it's taking logs of wood and then splitting them or breaking them down into smaller pieces. So he wears the word solet to say that it's becoming ground down into a smaller, finer thing, but it's speaking about wood and not about flour. And the Oruch brings, actually, that it's that you're allowed to make baskets on Chol HaMoed, but whatever it is, it's a melacha that you're allowed to do on Chol HaMoed. And what Rabbi Zera is saying is, if you can do a melacha on Chol HaMoed, why can't you bring a korban todah? So l'dudei misaladina nederim devot mi bayit. Why can't you bring those on Chol HaMoed? So Amar Abaye b'hakrava kuli amalo plige deshari. Everybody agrees that you can bring a korban on Chag HaSukkot. Ki plige the make malev about teacher. So Abaye now says that the brayta has nothing to do with what we thought until now about bringing korbanot. The question is about bal teacher, whether you have violated the restriction against delaying the bringing of a korban. Generally, when it comes to bringing of a korban, and we're going to see this in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, then you have a certain amount of time in which you can bring the korban. It's a machloket, and we're going to see that part of that machloket here between the Tanaim as to how much time you have. The minimum amount of time you could have is one regel. The medium time that you could have is three regalim. And the most time that you could have is three regalim in order. And that is at the Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. You're not over Baal Teacher until you go through all three regalim in the order, starting with Pesach and then going to Shavuot and Sukkot. So that's what could cause you Baal Teacher, which means if you committed to bring a korban, the amount of time you have to bring that korban, there's a limited amount of time. You have to fill your nether over a period of time. There's a expiry date, and the expiry date is determined by the regalim when people normally come up to Yerushalayim. And so that's what the machloket is about here. And now he's going to explain this. The Tanakama savar shlosh regalim amar rachmano afilu shlo kesidran. Tanakama holds like that middle position that you need three regalim in order to be over a baal teacher, but they don't have to be in order. Any three regalim, as soon as you pass three regalim, you're now in violation of baal teacher. Rabbi Shimon savar kesidran. Rabbi Shimon says they have to be in order. Kisidranin, if they were in order, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, then you're in violation. Shelo kisidran, if they're not in order, then you're not in violation. So according to the Tanakama, the way to read the right, according to Abaye, is that the Tanakama says, listen, if you have an obligation to bring a Korban Todah, well, you can't bring it on Pesach because it's Chametz. You can't bring it on Shavuot because you can't bring a Nedavah on Shavuot. Then on Sukkot, you better bring it on Sukkot, because if you don't bring it on Sukkot, you're going to be in violation of Baal Teacher. And that's the way to read it. If you take a nether to bring a Korban Todah before Pesach, you can bring it any time, but the most likely time you're going to bring it is when you go out for the regel. But the first two regalim don't permit you to bring a Korban Todah, so you have to bring it on the third regel on Sukkot, because otherwise you'll be in violation of Baal Teacher. And along comes Rabbi Shimon and says, that's not correct. Because it says, v'chag ha-matzot, v'chag ha-shavuot, v'chag ha-sukkot. And why does it put it in that order of v'chag ha-matzot, v'chag ha-shavuot, v'chag ha-sukkot? To tell you that only when you do it in order you've gone through those three, is it problematic? If you don't do an order, then it's not problematic. And therefore, he says that Kol Shabbat b'Chagamatzot, where Rashi explains, anything that comes on Chagamatzot, which means that anything that's before Pesach was an obligation before Pesach, then Baba Chag Shavuot v'Chazukot. Then you have Shavuot and Sukkot to bring in, and then you're done, because that's an order. Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Chol Shalom v'Chagamatzot, anything that's brought after Pesach, meaning that the obligation was created after Pesach, Enu Baba Chag Shavuot v'Chazukot. You don't have to bring it then on Shavuot and Sukkot, because you have another three regalim to go afterwards, because to get them in order, you have a whole another year to bring them. And seemingly both of them agree that you can't bring it on Yom Tov. Rabbi Shimon agrees that if you're obligated before Pesach, you need to bring it by Sukkot and Chol HaMoed Sukkot, and he doesn't say you have to bring it on Shavuot. But then the Gemara says, okay, then what's Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Shimon's position, which is Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Shimon, Omer, Mevi Adam Todato B'Chag HaSukkot. Person can bring his Todah on Chag HaSukkot. Eimat, when can he bring it? Ilem B'Chol HaMoed Hanu Tanakama. If you can bring it on Chol HaMoed, that's the Tanakama who says you have to bring it by Chol HaMoed Sukkot. Ela B'Yom Tov. So it must be that he's saying something different than the Tanakama, that you can bring it even on Yom Tov. Because Savar, Nidarim and Devot, Krivim B'Yom Tov. And then the conclusion would be that he says that Nidarim and Devot can be brought in Yom Tov. And that's the machloka between him and the Tanakama. They both agree that it doesn't have to be in order necessarily. But the question is, when you bring it on Sukkot, when can you bring it? According to the Tanakama, you can only bring it on Chol HaMoed. According to Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, you can bring it even on Yom Tov. And that would be what we said before. Hani Tanae, Kehani Tanae. These Tanaim argue about the same thing we just discussed, which is that they argue about whether you can bring Nedarim and Devot on Yom Tov. The Tanakama says no. That's like the latter brighter that we brought before. That's like Ula's position. And now Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon is saying you can bring him on Yom Tov. And so therefore it would be similar to the brighter that we brought, that we tried to amend. And it would be against Ula's position. But we have a machloket Tanaim. And the Gemara says then, wait a minute. If according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, you can bring it even on Yom Tov, then why do you have to wait until Sukkot? Why can't you bring it on Shavuot? Ma'ishna Chag Sukkot inakat. Why did he pick Chag Sukkot? You could have brought it on Chag Shavuot also, because he thinks you can bring it on Yom Tov. So Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, the Tameh. This is Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, to his own Shita, the Tanya. Rabbi Shimon Omer, lo yomar Chag Sukkot, shebo katuv medaber. Rabbi Shimon says that the Pasuk doesn't need to say Chag Sukkot, because in Parshat Re'eh, that's the context in which it says this. So it's already spoken about Chag HaSukkot. Why do you have to mention Chag HaSukkot? Lama ne'emar? Lomar sheze acharon. To tell you that's the last one. Meaning that Rabbi Shimon is l'shita to, who says you have to do them in order. And he's saying that in order to be violate Baal Tacher, Sukkot has to be the last of the three regalim. It has to be in order. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Omer, lomar sheze goreim. That this is the one that causes, the triggers, the Baal Tacher. Meaning that Rabbi Shimon says you don't need to have all three regalim in order. You don't have to have all three regalim not in order. You only have passed Sukkot. As soon as you pass Sukkot, you're in violation. So it doesn't matter if you took the neder before Pesach, you'd have Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Took it before Shavuot, you'd have Shavuot and Sukkot. Take it before Sukkot, you only have Sukkot, and you have to get it done by Sukkot. So he mentioned Sukkot to tell you that that's the pivotal regal, because that's the regal that makes it that you're chayav in Baal Te'acher. And therefore he mentioned Sukkot, even though technically you could have brought on Shavuot if you had made the nether before then, but if you didn't make it before then, even if you made it after Shavuot, you still only have Sukkot to bring it. Nevertheless, he still believes when you do bring it on Sukkot, you can bring it on Yom Tov, or you can bring it on Chol HaMoed. That is the reading of the Gemara according to Rashi, and the Gemara's Girsa is the Girsa that Rashi had in the Gemara. Tosafot is bothered by Rashi's Girsa because the way that the Girsa runs in the Gemara, you could have said that this was uniquely associated with a Korban Todah. And the reason you can't bring it on Pesach is because it's a Korban Todah. And maybe then the position of Rabbi Shimon has nothing to do with Nedarim and Nedavot in general, but rather has to do with the fact that it's a Korban Todah that is restricted on Pesach. That's restricted on Yom Tov and on Chol HaMoed. Tosafot points out, according to the Havamina, where we thought then we were having here a machloket about Nedarim and Nedavot, then it would have to read in Rabbi Shimon's view here that anything that cannot be brought on Chag HaMatzot, now, what can't be brought on Chag HaMatzot is a Korban Todah. Who says here that Nedarim and Devot can't be brought? So you'd have to read then into the position of Rabbi Shimon that's not just the Todah, it's also other Nedavot. Now, why would other Nedavot be restricted from being brought on Chol HaMoed? So then you'd have to read into Rabbi Shimon's position that he thinks on Chag HaMatzot you can't bring any Korbanot, not a Korban Todah, not a Korban Nedavah, not on Yom Tov, not on Chol HaMoed. And if that's the case, according to Rabbi Shimon, it would also be restricted on Chol HaMoed Sukkot. And then why mention that it's restricted on Shavuot? Obviously, it's restricted on Shavuot because you can't even bring it on Chol Hamoed Sukkot. And in addition, according to the Maskon of the Gemara that we're speaking about Baal Ta'acher, how could you have brought the Korban on Shavuot? When you say, oh, if you can bring it on Chag HaMatzot, then you can bring it on Chag HaShavuot and Chag HaSukkot. You can't bring it on Chag HaShavuot because it's a Nezer Nidavah, and you can't bring it on Chag HaShavuot anyway. So why mention that as one of the options is when you can bring it? And to say that it means that you could bring it before Shavuot or after Shavuot is a big dochak, because that's not what the Breita is speaking about. The Breita is speaking about the regalim themselves. So Tosfot is bothered by the nuances of the reading of the Gemara according to Rashi's Girsa, and therefore he promotes that the real Girsa should be Kol Abba b'Chag HaMatzot u'b'Chag HaShavuot. Anything can be brought both on Pesach and on Shavuot, then it can be brought on Sukkot. So now, Chag HaMatzot adds the issue of Chametz, that deals with Korban Todah, and Chag Shavuot deals with the issue of Nidarim Nidavot, because it's Yom Tov, it can't be brought on Shavuot. Only things that are brought on Chag HaMatzot and Chag Shavuot can be brought on Chag HaSukkot, and each one of those fails on one of the two. The Nidarim Nidavot can be brought on Chol Hamoed Pesach, but they can't be brought on Shavuot. The Todah can't be brought on either of those two dates, and therefore they'd be precluded from being brought on Chag HaSukkot. And then that's Rabbi Zeira's question in the Gemara. Why can't you bring Nidarim Devot on Chol Hamoed Sukkot? Why is there any restriction against bringing them on Chol Hamoed Sukkot? If we can do melacha for secular things, why can't we bring a korban that is a neder and nidavah on Chol Hamoed? And in that way, Tosfot solves the problem by having it be that the qualification time is both Chag HaMatzot and Chag Shavuot. And then in the final reading, when we deal with Baal Ta'acher, then the way to read it is that anything that can be brought on Chag Matzot over Chag Shavuot, anything that could have been brought, because the nether was taken before Pesach. Therefore, if it was taken before Pesach, it could have brought on Pesach and Shavuot. Then it must be brought on Sukkot, because otherwise you're going to run out of time. And then vice versa, anything that cannot be brought, Chag HaMatzot and Chag Shavuot, meaning it was taken after Pesach, then it's not brought on Sukkot, meaning it doesn't have to be brought on Sukkot, because then you're going to have a whole nother cycle before you violate Baal Ta'acher. And that's Tosafot's Girsa in the Gemara that makes it a little easier to read and makes sense out of the Breita. Okay, now the Gemara continues with the latter part of the Breita. V'yotziba mishum simcha, v'enu yotziba mishum chagiga. Which is that Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says, that Korban Todah, when you bring it on Chol Hamoed Sukkot, can discharge your obligation with regards to your samech simcha, but not your chagiga. Pshita. That's pretty straightforward, because of the principle that's underlying it, which is, davar shebechovahu. It's an obligatory Korban to bring a Korban chagiga, shalmei chagiga. Chol davar shebechovah, in a balim min achulin. Anything that's an obligatory korban, you got to pay out of your own pocket. You can't use already encumbered monies to pay for it. You can't use the things that you already dedicated to God to pay your obligations to God. So you can't use things that are already kadosh, already dedicated to be a korban todah, to discharge your obligation for shalmei chagiga. It says, lo tzricha da'af agav de parish. Even if you explicitly said you want to do it in this way. Kidiboy mine Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish mi Rabbi Yochanan. Like Rish Lakish posed the following question to Rabbi Yochanan. Omer aray alai todah, ve'etzei ba yidei chagiga. Person says that I'm obligated to bring a todah. Haray alai todah is a neder to bring a todah. But I only do it on the condition that I can bring that as my chagiga. It'll also discharge my obligation as a shamei chagiga. Or he says, are any nazir? I am a nazir ve'galeach b'ma'ot ma'aser sheni. And then I'm going to bring the korbanot that I'm obligated to bring at the end of my nazirut from my ma'aser sheni money that I have already in my possession. So both of those would be, if he didn't make the condition, illegal, because both of those are already items that are obligations. You know, todah is an obligation that you have to discharge for your neder. Ma'aser sheni is an obligation you have to bring up to Yerushalayim and to use for korbanot shlamim or other items there, but not to pay for your obligations. Now this person says, well, you know what? I'm only going to do this if I am able to override that problem. So I'm going to bring a korban todah and give a neder to bring a korban todah only if I can use that todah to also discharge my obligation for shalmei chagiga. Or I'm going to become a nazir only on condition that I can use my ma'aser sheni money to pay off the korbanot that I have to bring at the end of my nazirut. Mahu, what's the din? Reish Lakish asks Rabbi Yochanan. Amalei, nadur, veinu yotzei. The neder is binding and he has to bring a korban todah, and he cannot discharge his obligation with regards to a shalmei chagiga. Nazir, he is a nazir, veinu megaleach, and he can't use his ma'aser sheni money in order to discharge his obligation. Rashi and Tosafot over here say that the problem is order in which he said it. He put the statement of obligation first, and then he put the condition afterwards. So it's based on what we call tfos lashon rishon. We go after his first statement, and then the second part of his statement is a retraction. But he can't retract once he's already obligated himself. So when he says, Harei alai todah, he already obligated himself to bring a todah. And when he goes afterwards and says, oh, on condition that I can use it as Shami Chaya, that's trying to retract the first statement he made. He can't do that once the first statement goes into effect. And so therefore, putting them in that order is what causes the problem. And as Tosfos points out, if you were to reverse the order, then that may not be the case. Now, it might be when you reverse the order, you are able to do this and you're able to accomplish what you want. Or maybe when you reverse the order, you can't accomplish what you want and therefore the nether is not binding on you because you can't do what you asked to do. And then that would explain the subsequent Gemara, which is how Gavra, Damalu, this individual who's a Shechiv Meira, he's on his deathbed, and he's giving his last will and testament. He's telling them what he wants them to do in terms of distribution of his assets. He says, Havale Arba Mea Zuze Liploni, give 400 zuz to so-and-so. Ulinasi Brati, and he should marry my daughter. Amara Papa, Arba Mea Shakil, the individual can take the 400 zuz, because that's what's gifted to him. Brate, and the daughter of this individual will gift him the money. Ibai Nosif, if he wants to marry her, he can. Ibai Lo Nosif, if he doesn't want to marry, he doesn't have to marry her. Taima Damar Havule Ulinasiv. The reason is because he said to them, give the money, then he should marry my daughter. Aval Iamar, had he reversed the statement, the Nosiv, he should marry my daughter, Bahavule, and then give him the money, then that's a condition that he has to fulfill. Inosiv, if he marries the daughter, Shakil, he gets the money. Ilo Nosiv, lo Shakil. And so Tosfos and Rashi, you see this as a continuation of the previous part of the Gemara, and Tosfos quotes that explicitly, saying that the problem here is the order of the statement. If the statement was made in such a way that the condition was placed first, then the condition would be binding before the other statement comes into effect. But since he put the binding statement first, and then only afterwards put the condition, the binding statement takes effect before the condition comes in, and the condition's a retraction, which he can't do. And that would explain both the Gemara about the Korbanot, as well as the Gemara about the Shechiv Meira that's giving money and wants his daughter to be married off. The Balamor suggests that the problem here is something that we learned in the Gemara in Kedushin, is that when you have a condition, you have to have the condition come before the Maisa, before the action. If you have the Maisa, if you have the action first, and then the Tanai and the condition afterwards, the Maisa, the action is binding, and then the Tanai, the condition is invalid. If you put the condition first, and then have the action afterwards, then the Tanai is a premise for the action. And you see that from the case of the marriage, which is that when he said, marry my daughter, and then you get the money, there the condition is first, and then the action is second. So there it's binding. On the other hand, when he says, give them the money, and then he puts the condition of marrying the daughter, that means that he made basically a statement of action first, give the money, and then the condition was brought afterwards, and that condition is not binding. Because when Mai says, kodem l'tanai, the Tanai is not mitkayim. So that's the way the Balamor explains it. And you have to say a similar explanation for the Korbanot before as well, which as Rashi explains over here, that Amira Legvoa, a statement, a commitment to Chektesh, Kemisirato Lehejot. That's the equivalent of an action or a kinyan that's done by Hejot. And therefore, it's the equivalent of a Maise being before the Tanai. If the Maise goes before the Tanai is invalid, and that would be the explanation by the Korbanot as well. There's a third explanation of this issue. And that's brought in the Rif that explains the second half, the marriage issue, as being a problem as to whether the two statements are correlated. Because the first case where he says, give him the money and then marry my daughter, there he putting together two statements that are not naturally connected. They don't have any correlation between them besides from the fact that he made two statements. So over there, that's exactly what we're going to say. He made two statements. He said, give the money. And then he said, he could marry my daughter. So those are two different statements or two different quote-unquote gifts. One gift is the money, and the other gift is the ability to marry his daughter. And therefore, the individual can make a decision as to accept or decline each one of the gifts independently. On the other hand, if he reverses the order of the statements and puts the condition of marrying the daughter before the money, there it's clear, it becomes obvious that the gifting of the money is premised on the marrying of the daughter. So in that case, it becomes a single gift with a condition built into it. So it has to do with the language that he uses as to whether it's muchach, it's obvious that he is gifting it under that condition, which is the second lashon, or is it not obvious, and they could be independent statements. If they're independent statements, then we allow the person to make a choice as to whether he fulfills each one of them independently. If that is the case, then they're not necessarily related to the previous Gemara with regards to the Kodashim, because by the Kodashim, it's clear that they're correlated, the items, and nevertheless, it doesn't work. So then that might work for a different reason, for the other reasons that we spoke about. And therefore the correlation or the connection between these two Gemaras is not because they have the same reasoning behind them, like it was for Rashi and Tosafot and for the Balamor, rather simply that the outcome, the halacha, is the same, even though the reasoning behind the locha is different.
Yotiv Mireimar v'kamar lahashmaitato mishmei denafshe. Mireimar said over this whole issue with regards to the avarei alai todah, v'etzeba yidei chagigar, heni nazir, v'galeach b'ma'ot ma'isur sheni, he said over the locha in his own name, meaning that he gave the psak locha that it wasn't valid, or that it wasn't binding. V'amar le Ravina le Mireimar, so Ravina tells Mireimar, atun hachi matin tubala, you bring down the memra in that fashion. Anan, we in Eretz Yisrael could buy me Reish Lakish from Rabbi Yochanan Matin Tumla. We set it up as a question from Reish Lakish to Rabbi Yochanan, as we saw previously in the Gemara. Okay, we're going to stop here by the second two dots on the top of Chof Amud Aleph.